Okay, welcome back. We are taking a look back and sharing our memories and the actual voice and statements of Mr. William Mills Tompkins, one of the most remarkable people of our times, no doubt whatsoever. So, Frank, where are we with this whole remarkable story at this point? What do you think? How do you wrap it up? Where do you place us on the big board right now? Are we looking at an honest revelation? Are we going to see the end of this insulting, stupid cover-up finally? Or are people looking a little too anxiously at what's supposedly coming out at the end of the month? What do you think's going to happen? I mean, certainly Bill opened the door for us.
I think there's another foundational stone that's being laid, Jeff. And Bill would always say to me, he said, Frank, the things that you're talking to me about or showing me photographs of, he said, and the Rockwell integrated space chart to Colonel Ware sent to me and asked me to share with Bill and with Dr. Bob Wood and Michael Sala. When Bill saw that, he said, if they're letting all this information come out now, he said, we must be very, very close. And Colonel Ware would tell me, he said, Frank, My sources behind the scenes have told me that they've been given a green light. 80% of the people are on board with going forward and revealing and releasing this information, and the remaining 20% are falling by the wayside, that this is going to happen. And I was talking to another Air Force officer earlier this week who told me this: the information that's coming out on the History Channel with this Book of Secrets and with Ancient Aliens is getting people prepared for some major, major announcements. And he's not into this at all, but he brought that observation to my attention. And I think we're nudging a lot of people into wakefulness with all this material and with playing with Bill had given to us, sharing this with people on a more frequent basis.
Bob, what do you think? Are they going to finally open the door? In reality, if one simply collates and looks at and evaluates the statements that have already been made, it's the cover-up is over, but the public is just kind of yawning.
And things that the secret space program is being reported on the History Channel, for example, that's more close to the real thing than the things that are quote about to be reported officially from the government. At least two or three, which are totally false. I mean, one of their claim is that they're not ours, the ones we're seeing photographs of, and that's clearly false. And the other thing they're not reporting at all is 70 decades of crash recoveries and the work that was done by a huge variety of government agencies to figure out how they work. This is the real secret that they don't want to come out. But as Frank says, if you look at the things on the History Channel, they're getting closer to what the real truth is, but they're avoiding the details and the specifics.
Okay, very good. All right, let's go back and listen to some more of Bill Tompkins. I'm going to back it up just a little bit here. We just have a little over 10 minutes left in this particular section. So here we go.
Jeff, if you could go to the one where he talks about the real purpose of the Navy League, their search for the hidden openings into Mount Shasta, going into the secret entrances, and what the star visitors were sitting up in Medford, Oregon. That's the last two clips that I have here. And it's some remarkable information.
Okay, I have... that would be Navy League, Mount Shasta, and Medford, Oregon, strange occurrences, correct?
Yes, yep. It's a two-parter, and I'm telling you, it's extraordinary information.
Okay, let's see if I can get this. Is that the second link? I want to be sure.
It's 24. The second link, and then the third link goes into when he goes into that extraordinary hunting lodge story. And these two links that you're going to play, he told me all that in an afternoon, and I couldn't believe he's sharing all that information. And I said, do you want to make this public? Do you want to go on Jeff's program? He said, let's do it. Call Jeff and set it up. And he did it that night.
Yeah, that was all right. That was wild. All right, I hope I have this correct. It's the middle of the three links. You sent me three links, right?
Yes, it starts at 3425, Jeff.
Got it. All right, let me move it forward to that, and we will do just exactly that. 3420. There we go. Okay, here we go. The voice of our friend, who I feel is still here with us. And, well, we need to mention Mary. Let's mention Mary right now.
How's
wonderful,
she doing,
wonderful, yeah, lady. How is she? That's Bill's widow, and she was with him for a long time. How is she doing, Bob?
Well, I talked to her son, and he says that she's not as alert mentally as she used to be, but that he sees her regularly, and they're grateful for receiving the royalty checks that come from Bill's determination to make sure that was the case.
Good. All right. I guess we can say she's doing as well as can be expected. Good. Okay. Well, let's leave
I think that's right.
All right.
Yes.
Very good. Here we go. Here's the voice of William Mills Tompkins, selected by extraterrestrials.
It took place. My wife and I were heading for a vacation, and we wanted to move up to Oregon and get out from underneath all the pressure after the Apollo program laid off, I guess, almost immediately half of the people. There were 40,000 people.
So this would have been in the early 1970s?
A little later than that.
All right.
And so we moved up there, and we drove all over back up to different areas.
This is really amazing to me, because this is where I am, right here. I mean, Bill built two homes in Medford, designed them and built them. And what a designer. All right, here we go. Right here.
In the state. And we like Medford, so we moved up there and rented a place. And then I designed a futuristic house. And I wish I had the photographs and you could see it. But anyway.
Bill? You built it?
Yeah, and I had this contractor build it for us.
I'll go see it if you get the address to me. Don't say it over the air, but I'll go see it. That'd be fun.
Yeah, and I think you would really get a kick out of it. Anyway, there was some things wrong with the direction of the house that we didn't care for, and so we made a lot of money. We doubled our input,
uh-huh.
And I designed another place, which is really futuristic. And it's facing out toward the Pacific on the side of this volcano. It's an extinct volcano.
Mount McLaughlin?
It's on the east side of Medford. And so...
That's Mount Pitt or Mount... No. It's just for the record, for any of you up here listening, he was talking about Roxy Ann, not Mount McLaughlin, which is about 40 miles away, but it's quite an imposing volcano, even though it's extinct. All right, so let me back this up just a drop. Okay. So he built the first house. They weren't happy with the direction of it, so he built a second house.
Okay. And we liked Medford, so we moved up there and rented a place, and then I designed a futuristic house, and I wish I had the photographs and you could see it. But anyway,
Bill, you built it?
Yeah, and I had this contractor build it for us.
I'll go see it if you get the address to me. Don't say it over the air, but I'll go see it. That'd be fun.
Yeah, and I think you would really get a kick out of it. Anyway, there was some things wrong with the direction of the house that we didn't care for. And so we made a lot of money. We doubled our input,
uh-huh.
And I designed another place, which is really futuristic, and it's facing out toward the Pacific on the side of this volcano. It's an extinct volcano.
Mount McLaughlin?
Yeah, it's on the east side of the metro. And so...
That's Mount Pitt or Mount McLaughlin. They have two names for it.
Yeah, McLaughlin is what most people called it.
Right.
Okay, anyway, we built one on a lot which faced out over the entire valley.
Wow.
And you can't see the ocean, but you can see everything else. Fantastic view. And it has glass all around it. And it's really... we loved it, anyway.
I know the area well. That's volcano is not far from Lake of the Woods, one of the lakes up here, and we see it. I go up there, and you can see it's a spectacular mountain. And so you were on the lower side of that. Yeah,
there were a lot of my homes there now. Anyway, because people had this view. But anyway, I started this Navy League Council. I got a hold of a fellow that I knew that would have been in the Navy. He lived up there.
Uh-huh.
He was a captain. And I talked to him, and so he didn't go into the extraterrestrial, which is what I started with the whole thing. But anyway, he and I put it together. I had the ship models, and I put those in the big mall there in Medford.
Yeah.
Stores, so everybody could see it. And they got the advertisement in the paper about starting a new Navy League, and then... We had 170 people in less than 4 or 5 months.
Huh.
And half of those were all Navy, ex-Navy officers.
Mm-hmm.
And most of them had their own airplanes. And so we put together this program, and we started studying extraterrestrial. And we did that by having the regular meeting first, and then after the regular meeting, we then went into all the aspects of extraterrestrial. And one of the things that was extremely interesting there was that these pilots, these Navy, ex-Navy officers, they were, many of them were pilots, Navy pilots, so they had their own airplanes, they had their own business, and so they flew their planes all over the Western United States. In their business. So obviously they had to fly around Mount Shasta. And of course that was to find the doors that the UFOs kept coming out of and flying into. And so way before I even started this council, that's what these fellows were doing. They're trying to find the doors. And they got a hold of these big marine trucks that had 6 wheels, 4 in the back and 2 in front.
Uh-huh.
And so they would drive all the way around the base trying to find the doors.
And this is Mount Shasta?
There is no door. Mount Shasta, yeah.
It's
a massive underground extraterrestrial facility. And these fellas have their own planes, and if they're coming in from the south, they go by the mountain, and here's the UFOs coming out. And if they go east, they go to the north side of the mountain, and here they see UFOs flying in from outer space and going into the north side.
Did they see an opening, or did they just see them go down and disappear into the mountain?
They disappear. You don't, there is no door. They never found a door.
Okay.
So the molecular structure changes and allows them to enter.
Or how about this? Maybe they did have a big opening, but there was a some kind of a visual screen, a hologram, that made it look like it was part of the mountain, but they could fly right through it. That's an easier out.
Okay, that's an easier out. I'll buy that one. Anyway, this was very stressful for all these guys. And so they were into the extraterrestrial before he even got up there.
Huh. Wow.
So one day the mayor was in this group. The high commissioner Rick Holt was in this group.
I met Rick a couple of times.
Okay. Did you ever find out where he went?
No, he actually lived about a mile away from me. He was defeated in one of the 10 years ago or something like that. He made the trains run again here. He was an interesting guy.
Yeah. Yeah, very interesting fellow.
I'll bet he has a... I'd say I didn't know him, but if he was in your group, that was the sense I got when I talked to him. He said he knew a lot of stuff. We got to talking about a little bit of unusual paranormal sorts of things, and he was right there. So now this makes sense. Okay. Go ahead, please.
All right. So this whole group then, not everybody, but most of the group, were into extraterrestrial. And this is fantastic because it's a little bony place, mostly just farming and logging trees. And here's all these top Navy officers living there.
Yeah.
And so we had them all in this Navy League Council, and one day into the office, somebody telephoned the office of the council and said they were offering the council's, they used the word special projects people, a lunch. And so whoever had answered the phone called one of us. They didn't call me. But anyway, they said, how many people could we have come? And so they said, well, we'd like to have your upper group of your special projects people. So what's special projects? Okay, they knew what it was. It was extraterrestrial. So then they were given instruction as to how to get to this mountain area and what roads to take. And then when it got to be one main dirt road, how to maneuver up the side of this mountain, which is halfway between Ashland and Medford. Only it's about 50 miles west in the real rural area, nothing around it. And it's a single mountain. And so
it's in between. It's in between I-5 and the coast. It's west.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. So it's out past Williams and out there. It's way out there.
Way out in the boonies. Okay.
That's Bigfoot country.
Okay. All right. Now, so we had about 6 cars, I guess, and there were 28 of us, I guess. And so we kept driving out till we went to the dirt road, and then the dirt road finally turned. And this is interesting. Somebody made foot diameter signs, which are round, and it has an extraterrestrial face on it. It's a yellow sign. And these were put all the way from 5, the freeway, all the way to where you start to go up this mountain.
Really?
And, yes, really.
That's fascinating.
Okay, now, who did that? Okay. Anyway, so we all managed to go stay together, and we start up the mountain. Now, the dirt road that we had going up the hill on the west side, okay, towards the ocean, it had never been driven in 20 years.
Was this an old logging road or something?
Yeah, and it's all eroded. So that when you start up, it was 45 degrees off the right-hand side where this road was, and probably 45 degrees all the way around the mountain. Anyway, we managed to drive like 3 miles an hour up the side of this thing. We get up to the top, and all of a sudden, there was a flat area, like a sort of a road thing. And it wasn't made of asphalt, and it wasn't made of concrete, but it was a nice, smooth, flat area, trees all around, so you can't see anything. We drove on to this. This was up on top of the mountain. So we drove on this for about 2 blocks, and there was a split. So we didn't know which one to take, so we turned right. And we drove only 1 block. But there's trees. I mean, there's millions of trees, so you can't see this other open area. And this other open area has 3 vehicles. and they're parked there. And different people saw different vehicles of the 28, 29 people that were for the luncheon. So to me, they looked like massive helicopters. They were bright colors, silver, red, blue, brilliant colors. And the landing gears were retracted, and they were floating. They were floating like 5 feet above this flat area. What in the heck is that? So while we're trying to figure that out, we're getting late. So we turn around and go back down to where we got on the road part, and we drove about 5 blocks. And on the left was this enormous hunting lodge. I mean, it was, the ceiling was like 4 feet high. I mean, 4 stories high.
What was it again? A what?
It was a
hunting lodge.
Lodge.
Okay.
Yeah, massive hunting lodge, okay?
Uh-huh.
And hardly any area for parking, but we park our cars out front.
Yeah.
So we go inside. Nobody meets us in this great big open area that then leads down a hallway to this enormous room, which had like 30-foot ceilings. And this one young lady apologized for not meeting us at the door, but something was going on. Anyway, we're ushered in. Everybody is dressed in dress clothes. And, of course, we were all dressed in dress clothes.
There were already people.
We were
Bill, excuse me. They were.
Yeah.
Okay. You come across this hunting lodge, 3 or 4 stories tall. That's enormous. You go inside, and there's some kind of an event going on in there, you say, and there are other people in there you were led to?
There was about 30 other people.
Okay.
They were getting a drink, and they were talking, and so they came over and introduced themselves, some of them, and by name and everything, and they were so glad that we came. And
this is out in the middle of nowhere.
Yes, sir.
Now, I have one question, Bill, please. Who, again, invited your group to go out to this location, and who knew about the location? How did you get invited to go out here?
Okay, that didn't make any sense either, because we got a telephone call that came into the office, okay?
Right.
And it said they were inviting several of the Navy League Council people to lunch. And so that was the information how to get there. And that if we were, if we approved going, they would then set the time up and the date up. So nobody got any information about who these people were, what the agenda was. It's just a nice lunch.
You took it on faith, and you guys all drove out there. And I know exactly what Bill is talking about, and this is virgin territory. There's nothing out there except beautiful mountains and rolling hills all the way to the ocean.
And fantastically beautiful pine trees, okay?
Yeah.
They're just gorgeous.
Yeah.
Wow.
Bill, hold on now. Wait a second. What I want to do is I have to pause for the top of the hour here. We're going to stop. This is a perfect place to pause. And then we're going to come back and pick this story up in just a few minutes.
Now, it is wild.
Yeah, I'm in.
It is wild.
I'm in Ashland, and
okay.
You asked about what happened to Rick Holt. I may have Rick's phone number. If you wanted to get in touch with him, I might be able to do that. I don't know. I'll have to check it.
Oh, thank you. You're a gentleman and a scholar. Yes.
Well, one or the other. So what we'll do is take our break.
Okay, let me pause there. We're not going to take a break here. I'm going to cue up the rest of this. It's a
good.
Incredible story. I know this land. You don't go out there. You just don't go there. It's out in the middle of nowhere. They went off I-5, and they went back on dirt roads. And then they got to this we'll call it a mountaintop. I don't know, 5,000 feet maybe. And They go up. There's no road to it except ancient logging roads, which are all full of ruts. And they go up there on the dirt with ruts, and they work their way up the hill, around the side and around the side. And they get up to the top, and there are three vehicles. I think many of you caught this. Vehicles, as in flying vehicles that don't need a long runway to take off and land on. And they're not helicopters. Okay? And they're hovering there. That's where the other guests came from. They were brought there by ET vehicles. So they get out of their cars, and they go up, and a woman comes over, and or what appears to be a woman, come on in, and they go in, and they start shaking hands and talking. These are ETs, in all likelihood, brought there for this meeting, to meet the Navy League people, to meet Bill Tompkins. And I'm not kidding you. This is out in the middle of nowhere. Whoever put those round ET head signs up on the dirt road to lead them there, that's a fun thing, too. Now, as far as Rick Holt goes, I talked to Rick Past, but I tracked his son down, and I called his son. He's still living in the same house, about less than a mile from me. And I talked to his son at great length, and he had three children, Rick's grandchildren. Rick Holt, former county supervisor, and he was there on this junket. And the son, when I started raising the issue of that day and that meeting, he was an adult, but he didn't want to talk about it. He just didn't want to go there. In other words, it was off limits. He said, I've got three kids, and I just don't want to get into that. So this was a very real deal that we're describing, and that which happened.
Jeff, what triggered it was I was talking to Bill that day about Goldwater, and when I mentioned the name Goldwater, he said, I knew Goldwater's son-in-law, who was Rick Holt. And he said, I knew him up in Oregon for a 10-year period, and he said he had experiences with visitors, and he shared all the information with Goldwater. He said sometimes Rick would disappear for 2 to 3 weeks at a time, and he was a county commissioner, and he never got into any hot water because of it. He'd disappear, and he'd come back, he'd share information with Bill and also with Goldwater. That's what triggered this whole story.
Well, fascinating. I tried to kind of make friends with his son and all. He's a very nice guy, but he did not want anything to do with this subject. The brother, he had a brother who was kind of a wild man, not a family man like this son of Rick Holt's. And I think he said he gathered up those signs. He grabbed some of them.
Yes. The sons gathered up the signs and kept them as like mementos.
Yep, I tried to track that down. I didn't have any luck, but anyhow, this is all wild. Here we go.
The remarkable William Tompkins about a luncheon that he had on top of a mountain. Now, the mountain probably, I'm going to guess, would be 5,000 feet, something like that in elevation. And he and a group of nearly 30 people drove from Medford west to out in the middle, literally, of God's country, nowhere. And there were very strange signs leading off a highway with round signs with an ET face on it all the way up to this mountain. And at the top of the mountain, as you just heard, was a very strange, we call it paved or improved flat area. And at one point, they believed they saw three automobiles, but these automobiles were hovering above the ground. They weren't automobiles, and this is daylight. They drove back down the road and found an enormous structure, four stories in height, walked in, were not greeted by anyone, and finally a young woman came up and apologized and took them into apparently a large meeting room where there were about 30 other people. Take it away, Bill. Let's hear the rest.
Okay. Just one thing about the three vehicles. My impression was that these were three massive helicopters, they would be maybe 100 feet long.
That's awfully massive.
They were, yes, and but other people didn't see the blades on the top, so There were different versions of what those bright painted vehicles that were about 5 feet above the ground with no landing gear. And so we're into a different life here now.
Got it.
So going into this great big room.
What was the building like, Bill? I'm sorry. What was the building like? Was it wood on the outside, like a log cabin building, or was it more of a modern construction? What was it like?
It was extremely all wood, wood
all
roof,
wood. Okay.
And a sort of old looking, like it had been there for 1,000 years, but obviously
wow.
it wasn't. But the size of the main living room was enormous, and it had all these heads of bears and lions, that had been cut off and put on the walls, and all over it, all kinds of pictures of different animals and this sort of thing. All
over they had African animals, lions.
No. No, not at
all. Oh, mountain lions.
Mountain lions, okay, and bears.
Okay.
Must have been 20 different bears down the one wall.
Wow.
They were on three walls. The other wall was all glass with a gorgeous view. They were all talking, and they said that they enjoyed having us there, and there was just sort of introductions. And a drink before dinner or before lunch.
Yeah.
And then they escorted us into this great big dining room, and which was separate. And the west side of that had this fantastic view out towards the Pacific Ocean. Unbelievable.
Could you see the Pacific Ocean?
No, we could not.
No, you're too far inland.
Yeah, too far inland.
They were probably 30 or 40 miles away from the ocean, but they were looking to the west, is what he's saying.
Yeah.
But it was a beautiful view. I mean, spectacular.
Yeah.
And the interesting thing about this is that who were the people in this Navy League Council? And where did we meet? Well, because the airport commissioner, the guy that ran the airport,
Medford Airport.
Medford Airport. We used his conference room as for many of our meetings.
I see.
And then the mayor, we had some of our meetings at the mayor's office. Mm. And then we had some of our meetings at the commissioner's office. And,
Rick Holtz?
Rick Holtz, yeah. Now, I was wrong in saying that somebody called the office. I remember now that Rick Holt got the call. Okay?
Uh-huh.
And I've talked to his son later, but that's one of the people you might want to check with. But anyway, Rick was very knowledgeable, and this is important in the fact that he attended this rain dance. Okay?
Oh, he was with you in the group that went up there?
Yes.
Okay, and I didn't get that. I got it now. Yeah.
Okay, and so, but Rick Holt is, his family is Senator Goldwater's family.
I didn't know that.
And so everything that Goldwater was doing, Rick Holt would repeat in the meetings because Goldwater was involved in the government at a very high level on military, and he had been a general in the
Air
Force.
Yeah.
And this man knew all about extraterrestrials, and everything that Goldwater knew, Rick Holt knew.
Oh.
Because Rick Holt, when he was gone, he would be over with the family. And Goldwater's house, and he would bring his family, take the kids out of school, and fly over to Goldwater's house, and they would get together for another 2 or 3 weeks. And and so the kids would be pulled out of school while they're doing this.
That's amazing.
And so he knew everything about extraterrestrial. Okay.
Now you know the story. You know the story about Goldwater asking General Curtis LeMay. We've talked about that, about ET, and LeMay became furious and said, "Damn it! Don't ever ask me that again." He wouldn't answer.
Don't ever ask me that again. Period.
Yeah.
And but there were very close individuals. They were friends.
Sure.
They weren't.
Understand.
And so
back at the lodge or whatever this place was, were you served food? Was there food there going on? What was going on?
Yeah, they after everybody talked and they had the drinks, we sat down with them. They sat on this long, very long table, and we sat on the other side of one long table. So we were facing the view in the windows. They were facing the wall.
And the bears.
Okay. And, and the bears, yeah. And the deer. And so the conversation went everything normal until one of them said, "We're very interested in what your thrust is." And so these people knew exactly what our thrust was. They knew exactly what we were doing. They knew every individual that was in the council. They knew knew all about their families. They knew they were in the Navy. They knew they were officers, all ball of wax. They knew everything about us. And as this progressed and more questions were asked about extraterrestrial and what we were doing and Mount Shasta and other areas in the Northwest where extraterrestrials had been very heavy. Like, a lot of people don't know that the big tower in Seattle, Washington,
the Space Needle,
that's a copy of one of the UFOs that everybody saw up there and landed.
Yeah.
And, in fact, two of those vehicles landed close to, like, 30 miles outside of Seattle, believe it or not.
Huh.
And,
okay.
There's a whole story that goes with that.
Yeah. Bill, what did the people across the table look like? Normal folks? What did they look like?
They looked exactly like us, except I would say they were better looking men and certainly more beautiful women. Okay?
Right.
And but everybody's dressed like we were. Know the difference.
Mm-hmm.
And then before one question was answered by us, everything changed, and that dining room became all glass ceiling, glass walls, we were not on the planet at all. We were way out in the galaxy in just one second, all of us. Now, they changed from the outfits they were wearing to, frankly, more skimpy outfits, most of it white. And we were sitting at the same table, but it had changed to an all-glass table. Our chairs were, they were like glass chairs or some sort of a plastic that's clear, not the chairs we've been sitting on. And so now we're out in the galaxy. We're looking down on a massive futuristic city. And we are all talking, and they're explaining things to us. And this went on for a good 5 minutes. And then, bang, we're back in the place that we started with. Now, I say we were there for 5 minutes. But again, we've argued, all of us have argued, how long we were really out there versus the time that we were in the old building. And everybody's got a different number. And The interesting thing about this is that there was no highway up to this facility. The only way you could get there was by helicopter. Only way you could get there. Or by some sort of a spaceship.
Well, you went up on that real ratty road, though. 45-degree road.
Yeah, and so it took us a long time to get there. They already knew it was going to take us a long time to get there, so they postponed that luncheon almost 2 hours.
I see.
So we're trying to get, because we're only doing 3 miles an hour and stopping.
Sure.
Because we're starting to slide down the side of the mountain.
Oh, no. Yeah, wow.
And so it really worried us. We finally got up there. Now, going back, and this is extremely important, going back,
tell us more about the luncheon. What did you eat? What happened? And then you said goodbye and wind up the affair itself.
Yeah, and so it ended up that they were to contact us, and they wanted to get together some specific people, and they named those people. And their mission was to contact this group Navy people, ex-Navy people, and implement some of the agendas that we had, and clear up some of the areas that we were. And I didn't get into what we really did, but like there's a fellow that his name was Joe Royal, R-O-Y-A-L. He's a Navy commander. Now listen to this. He's commander of the Naval Reserve Center there in Medford. Okay. So he took over this command by calling me and having me meet him for breakfast at the Red Lion Restaurant downtown.
Right.
And he had spent the last 7 years, part of the time was in Area 51, and the rest was in another facility much larger. His mission and his assignment, because he was a physicist, not just a Navy commander, and he had to decipher the materials used on the extraterrestrial vehicles which he crashed. He spent 7 years doing this, and he never could come up with the material as it really was. So he was in a nervous condition. His wife and children were nervous because of him. So they told him that his order was to take over this small Navy Reserve Center at Medford, and this is putting you out to pasture so that you can recover, and then you got to come back and finish your job. Now, the guy who was also a Navy commander that was head of that same reserve facility, because I had talked to him because we were using their facility for some of our meetings. Okay? He got the orders that he had to go to San Diego, go aboard and command a landing assault aircraft carrier. He then froze. He couldn't believe he tried to get out of this job. He talked to me like we were brothers, and told me the whole story. He knew that he would put up the wrong command, and when they're putting the water into the aft side so yes. they could get the tanks out into the ocean,
yeah.
he would go too far and sink the ship by his order. He knew this was going to happen to him, and he had a nervous breakdown. I never found out what happened to him, but he got replaced, went someplace. And this other fellow took over with this other mission that he had. And we became good friends, the commander of the now base, And I had set up, I got together with friends of mine at the Naval Air Station in San Diego, which is Miramar, and it was Navy at that time. And I wanted to set up a command center, a CQANA, a Command Control Communication and Intelligence Center training center at the base, which is way out, way beyond the normal requirements of a reserve center. I'd set this up. So I flew down to San Diego. I went over to the base. I ran the car, went over to the base. I talked to this friend of mine, and he gave me 14 F-14 fighter computers that's used for training F-14s. So the commander there also shipped those up to the Naval Research Center for me. I didn't even have to transport them. So I could set them up in a step-down area.
In Medford?
Command center in the airport at the Navy Reserve Center.
In Medford?
In Medford, yeah. And well, it was just outside of Medford. And so I was doing all kinds of stuff, and we were training sea cadets. And these sea cadets joined... they kept joining. There were some of them families of some of these Navy officers, and then there were other people, and we had more ship models in the mall, and there was a second big group of people came in from that second group using the models for the Navy. And so we were getting all these top families for the sea cadets. And so the sea cadets then were instructed in extraterrestrial. And that's where some of them actually, after school in the rural areas, went out to one of the farms, three or four of the kids. The lady would show up from the other side of the barn, and she had the big display, which floated, and she instructed them for another hour. And they did that like three or four times a week. And so then that was taking place with some of the officers' children, not just other people, other people's families' kids. And so this whole thing is wild about what we were doing in the regular stuff, which is going on, but it was related to extraterrestrial. Those sea cadets formed their own space battle group for their training. They used naval officers and enlisted personnel's names and titles, just like they're in the Navy. We took them aboard submarines, aircraft carriers, destroyers.
Okay. All right, we got to stop. I'm going to be able to say a couple words, wrap this up, and thank Dr. Bob Wood and Frank. All right, this is pretty wild. We've still had about 10 minutes to go here. Frank, what didn't we get to hear this time?
The space cadets were further trained by the space visitors using holograms, and they were ultimately taken onboard craft, taken out into the galaxy, and Bill went with them. And now they're part of the secret space program, the Navy program off-planet.
Remember, everyone,
stuff, just really
it's
stuff.
Always the Navy. It's not the Air Force, not the Army. It's always the Navy.
Always the Navy. Yeah.
Bob, thank you for hanging in there. It's fascinating material. Any comments about this?
Yeah, I just want to say that page 182 to 185 is a sort of a simple summary of the amazing story that Bill just gave. It's volume 2. And the story that Bill just gave will be in volume 3.
Great.
When do you expect that out, Bob? When do you expect volume 3?
Well, it's a lot more work than I thought it was going to be, but I'm thinking we're maybe 4 months from now.
Well, okay. That's a great achievement. Thanks, Bob, for being here again. Great to talk with you as always, and we look forward to our next visit.
Thank you, Jeff. I enjoyed it.
Okay, you bet. And Frank, thank you. Just Bill Tompkins, if you all out there listening, wherever you are, This material just poured out of Bill nonstop. 55 hours on this program of story after story, experience after experience, and each one of them was just kind of a superficial brush stroke over what, like this meeting at that alleged lodge, whatever that really was.
Yes.
It may have been
God.
A big, it may have been a big craft that was designed to look like a lodge. We don't know.
But he lived it. He lived it all.
He did. He was there. He was there. Thank you, Frank, very much.
He was so happy to share it. He was so happy to share this on your program. He was so happy to share everything that he did on your program.
He was a great man, and I so
and never had
totally
any hesitation, and he was never told not to talk about things. His only the only thing he couldn't do is use email. And I said, Bill, if that's the only thing you're asking him not to do, don't worry about it. We can get around it.
Wow. I mean, we got along just I've had a lot of people on the radio and never had somebody more affable, friendly, kind, brilliant, extraordinary than William Mills Tompkins.
Never boring.
No, just amazing. Thanks, Frank. We'll talk soon.
God bless him and his work.
Indeed. Okay. Good night. All right. And thanks to all of you for being here. I hope you enjoyed that. Again, these are going to come out in Volume 3. Book 2 is out there now. And look in Guests. Right underneath Dr. Bob Wood, you'll find the book. And then you'll find comments that have been made about the book already. This is Volume 2. And Volume 3 is on the way. Have a great weekend. Take care. And we'll talk soon.
Browse through our archives of over 6,000 hours of legendary...
Oxygen. It's nature's oldest therapy and plays an essential role in destroying viruses, bacteria, mold, yeast, and fungus, and keeping the human body healthy and...